The clerk will call the docket.
Marion Parrish, Administrator of the State of Athens, Parrish against James J. Lee, L. Stephen Hemmer, Robert T. Hall, Jordan F. Sessi, Samantha K. Sledge, Julie M. Porter, Cody Cowan, Mike Lee Olszewski, Benjamin Wenger, Richard L. Nagel, James N. Mack, Lee Kelly.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Steve Emmert, and along with Sam Sledge, who's to my far right, and Julie Porto, I represent the estate in this case involving medical malpractice and wrongful death. There are two assignments here, and I frankly believe that the chess pieces are fairly well set up by the brief, so I don't propose to go over things that I've already told you about in writing. Instead, what I propose to do is try to identify the fulcrums for the two assignments there so we can focus on those. With regard to Assignment 2 and Dr. Boyd, the geneticist, I would invite the Court's attention at this point right now to page 392 of the appendix, toward the end of the main volume. This is cross-examination of Dr. Boyd by the state's lawyer. And this is after Dr. Boyd has proposed to offer a differential diagnosis, excluding one cause after another until there's only one left. And at this point, at the bottom of page 392, starting at page 16, the lawyer asks Dr. Boyd, well, what about the respiratory cause that is our theory of the case, that our doctors have already testified about? His answer is on page 393, and it's very short. I'm not qualified to judge that. If you're referring to a particular case that's been published, I'm not aware of it, but I cannot speculate whether that's a possibility because it's out of the area of my expertise. Now, at this point, now that the briefs are in this court, Dr. Lee takes a different tack. What he's saying instead of, I can't judge that, is Dr. Boyd obviously relied upon another doctor to do that. Now, it has to be implicitly, because Dr. Boyd certainly didn't say that at trial, and this question would have been the natural point in the proceedings for him to state that if it were true. But he never did that at trial. He would have been destroyed on the witness stand if he had done so.
What difference does it make? Because the autopsy didn't rule out respiratory causes either.
Correct. The autopsy report only said it's a cardiac arrhythmia of unknown etiology, unknown origin. And our theory of the case was that the origin was respiratory distress.
What I'm getting at is that whether or not it's implicit, because I think it is implicit whenever an expert says, I reviewed everything, we've got to look at everything. But we looked at it, at least I've looked at it, and I don't understand how the autopsy sentence rules out a respiratory cause at all.
The autopsy sentence doesn't rule out a respiratory cause.
So that's your fulcrum, right?
I think so. At this point, if there is nothing in the records, because the doctor didn't testify, the medical examiner didn't testify, if the only thing in the records they have is that we don't know anything about anything other than cardiac arrhythmias, and that's the basis of their testimony, Dr. Lee is the proponent of this evidence. He has to establish the foundation for it. And as we've seen from the cases that we've cited, at least the recent cases, the Hyundai case and the Holiday Motor case, if evidence doesn't have proper foundation, it doesn't relate to its weight. It's inadmissible. So there's nothing in the record to support the admissibility of that opinion. He had to exclude other causes, and there isn't anything in the record to do that.
Now, Mr. Emmert, to clear this up so that we can focus on what at least I think you believe the issue really is, this is an unfortunate and tragic death of this child. The medical examiner's report says cardiac arrhythmia of unknown etiology is the cause of death.
Right.
The defendant says that the arrhythmia was caused by Brugada syndrome. And your witness says it was a respiratory incident and compromise that caused cardiac arrhythmia.
Correct.
When you get to the testimony that you just pointed us to, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if what you're saying is that Dr. Boyd, the geneticist's opinion, is expressly conditioned upon the ability to rule out the respiratory cause. He said, I can't do it because I'm not qualified. And as a result, your position is that the proper foundation for the expert opinion has not been laid and the testimony should not have been permitted at all.
That's exactly correct. I think that the court understands my position on this, so I don't propose to linger on it. Let me turn to assignment three, which is
counsel. While we're dealing with Dr. Boyd's testimony, let's look briefly at his direct testimony. I'm generally looking at pages 306 and 307. He was asked, "You're involved with other specialties in assisting your patients," and he says, "That's the rule, that genetics is a very integrative field of medicine." And then he points out that he relies upon other subspecialties, cardiology, pulmonary, internal medicine. Later on he talks about ophthalmologists, etc. To what extent, in this case, what other specialties should have been brought in at trial in order to make the case that you believe he attempted to make but failed to make?
The first thing that comes to mind is forensic pathology. Okay. That would have been an easy way to determine the cause of death by someone who specializes in that. A pulmonary specialist would also have been able to determine whether there was a breathing-related cause of the cardiac arrhythmias. Now, we did have those witnesses. There were Dr. Arden and Dr. Yoon, Y-O-O-N, who testified on our behalf and explained to the jury how a lack of breathing could lead to cardiac arrhythmias. I don't doubt that the medical examiner chose not to go out of her field of expertise in order to do that, but those are the fields that come to mind immediately that I think would have been correct.
Okay, thank you.
On assignment three, with regard to Dr. Lee's testimony himself, his current positions are twofold. First, he says at this point, he was only explaining what he did. He's always able to do that. But that's not what happened. What he was explaining is what he would have done in a different set of circumstances, if he had different information, if he could make a different diagnosis and recommend a different course of treatment. That's not at all explaining what he did. It's a different matter. Second, he says if you don't accept that,
why is explaining what you would have done if you're a defendant and you're being sued for what you didn't do, why is that an expert opinion? That's just, you tell me this is what I was going to do. I offer no opinion on it. I'm just telling you, give me this stimulus, I'll give you this reaction.
Because that calls for a medical decision. It calls for medical expertise. And in that situation, it calls for a separate medical opinion. If you have conditions one, set of conditions here, the course of treatment is this. If you have a different set of conditions, then the course of treatment is something else.
And then presuppose that he's not saying he could have done it foolishly, and he doesn't presuppose that it would have been reasonable, but he's not going that far. He's just saying, if this could have happened, I would have done this. Let other people judge whether that's a good idea or not.
And I think it would have been perfectly permissible for him to say that. All he had to do was list himself as an expert witness, because that is necessarily expert testimony. Here's the ultimate issue in this. If this testimony, if I'd known this information, I would never recommend surgery, something like that, were offered by a true layman, a carpenter, a chef, a truck driver, would any of us ever accept it? Of course not. This is a medical diagnosis. It's a medical recommendation for a course of treatment. And to this point in the proceedings, we don't have Dr. Lee's answer to that question. If it's truly a lay opinion, how would we ever allow any real layman to give that answer? At this point, I propose to let him do so.
All right.
May it please the court. I'm Mike Oshesky, and with me is Ben Wenger. And together we represent Dr. James Lee and his practice group, the appellees in this case. I'd like to first discuss the commentary about Dr. Boyd. Dr. Boyd was qualified to speak to the genetic cause of death in this case. Dr. Boyd did not speak in a vacuum. I know that the appellant raised the Dagner case with Dr. Shank, an emergency room physician, who this court said was not qualified to speak on a cause of death in that case because that doctor admitted there were multiple factors that go into the cause of death, and he himself was not qualified to rule out those that he did not have qualification for. This case is different than Dagner, and this case is different than what was just presented. Dr. Boyd did not speak in a vacuum. Dr. Boyd relied upon, as he testified, in fact, going back to the exact page counsel just asked you to go to, the appendix page 392, he stated right before the question you were shown, his answer at line 13 was, all likely causes of death. I have either excluded myself or have relied on the expertise of people who are qualified to exclude them.
All right, now that would be terrific if it were true. But it doesn't appear to be true to me. The actual medical examiner is one of the doctors that he says he relied upon, and that the medical examiner excluded a respiratory cause of the cardiac arrhythmia. But if you look at the medical examiner's report, it doesn't say that. It simply says, cause of death, cardiac arrhythmia of unknown etiology. He didn't say that, or she didn't say, that it had to do with a compromise of respiratory function. She simply said it was unknown. And he says he relies on this opinion in giving his opinion, and that he ruled out all of these other things. It's sort of in the nature of a differential diagnosis, if you will, which I don't think is required for an expert opinion. But when you actually condition your opinion on having ruled out everything else and you've relied on other professionals, and you say you have, well, you better have. And he didn't.
Well, it's our position, Your Honor, if you look at appendix page 469, that Dr. Posthumus, the medical examiner who actually did the autopsy and wrote cardiac arrhythmia of unknown etiology as cause of death, two paragraphs above that, she explained the limitation in her analysis of how that arrhythmia occurred. She wrote, although nothing of significance was identified microscopically in the heart, an underlying cardiac channelopathy or cardiac conduction system disorder cannot be ruled out, especially given that the child is a product of a consanguineous marriage. That is the pathologist saying, this was a cardiac arrhythmia, I can't put my finger on the cause, but I suspect it's a genetic cause because he was a product of a consanguineous marriage.
Well, how is that enough? That's a lot of speculation on the face of it.
Understood. And to be clear, Dr. Boyd did not ever testify. He ruled out pulmonary because he did not. He relied upon posthumous, number one. Number two, Dr.
Can I restate the same question to you because I'm not understanding your
okay.
argument. Boyd relied upon the autopsy to rule out the respiratory failure.
Yes.
Where does it say, in a way that I can understand this, in the autopsy that a respiratory failure was ruled out?
This is what
said it, I would be okay, you wouldn't.
This is what it would say if there was a respiratory cause of death. Respiratory arrest. That's what the cause of death would be if it was a respiratory cause of death. That's not what Dr. Posthumus wrote. And reasonably prudent physicians like Dr. Boyd, who in the last 4 to 5 years before trial considered genetic causes of death 20 to 30 times in his clinical practice, can reasonably look at this and determine it. However, I would add to that, Your Honor.
But that would be different. If Boyd said, you know, look, you judges and lawyers don't understand this, but there's a 90% probability it's genetic, and I don't really need to know any more specifics about the respiratory, because I can rule that out on my own. But in Cross, he threw that overboard.
I'm not here to say Dr. Boyd can speak to the pulmonary, to a possible pulmonary cause of death. I'm not making that argument. The argument I'm making is he didn't have to because he can rely on others who have. For example, the reasonableness of his reading of this autopsy report and the conclusion that Dr. Posthumus had, which is a cardiac arrhythmia of unknown etiology, is not a respiratory problem, is supported by Mrs. Trace's own expert, Dr. Yoon, at appendix pages 175, 176. She also, an otolaryngologist, spoke to the cause of death. She is not a geneticist. She could not rule out the genetic cause, no more than Dr. Boyd could rule out the respiratory cause. Yet Dr. Yoon, looking at this exact same report, testified on those pages that there was the question was there a shred of evidence to support that in the autopsy, that the cardiac arrhythmia was a respiratory compromise? Her answer was, not per se. I would have to defer to a forensic pathologist. She could not read this report and come to the conclusion that the cardiac arrhythmia, that there's any evidence that the cardiac arrhythmia came from a respiratory compromise.
You're talking about Dr. Yoon?
Dr. Yoon.
All right, well, Dr. Yoon went on to, you connect the dots up. Dr. Yoon was asked, respiratory compromise, you become hypoxic. You don't deliver oxygen to your heart muscle, so your heart muscle becomes impaired, and you have an arrhythmia, and you die. So technically, was it a cardiac arrhythmia? Maybe so, but brought on by respiratory depression. That's her testimony. If you look in the medical report, the autopsy, you see in the text of the case summary, it says the presence of type 2 astrocytosis is also seen in infants in a hypoxic and hypoglycemic state. So those dots connect up, which indicates that there's support in the autopsy of a respiratory cause of the arrhythmia. That, and it's not a matter of ruling it out. It's actually ruled in.
I would like to share with the court that this is not the only evidence put on by Dr. Lee regarding Adam Tracia's cause of death not being respiratory. We had a different expert.
The issue is not sufficiency of the evidence. The issue is whether Boyd's expert conclusion is based on the Adam Foundation. It's
correct.
Not whether he's qualified. He obviously was qualified. It's whether the expert that he delivered, which was the core of the case,
right,
was missing a variable that logically could not be missed for this conclusion to be reached.
In the opening remarks, Mrs. Tracia's counsel just indicated that a pulmonologist could reasonably speak to the question as to whether or not this is a respiratory cause of death.
Well, that may be so, but the issue before us is whether or not Dr. Boyd's testimony should have been permitted, since it was specifically conditioned upon reliance on the autopsy and the medical examiner's report, having ruled out the respiratory cause of cardiac arrhythmia. And it didn't.
And Dr. Lee put on evidence through a different expert who was a pulmonologist who specifically testified on respiratory cause of death. His name is Dr.
Where's that in the joint appendix?
Pardon me?
Where's that in the joint appendix?
It is not in the joint appendix, but it is in the trial transcript in the record. And I'll state that for the audio tape. It's at the day 6 of the trial transcript, pages 90 through 94, is where Dr. Casalero's trial transcript, because he had a videotaped deposition, was admitted into evidence. In that testimony, Dr. Casalero, a pulmonologist, testified at pages 15, 17, 21, and 81 of that transcript that there was no evidence that Adam Trace suffered a respiratory or pulmonary complication that led to his death.
You said 15, 17, 21, 81?
Correct.
Thank you.
He also testified at page 61, it does, quote, it doesn't appear to be that it was a respiratory cause of death, close quote. And then at page 66 testified, quote, I think the crux of it is, did his heart rate stop first and then his breathing stop, and then he stopped breathing? And I think that's what my belief is. Heart rate first, then stop breathing. Mrs. Tracia's argument is stopped breathing, then stopped heart rate.
Well, did Dr. Boyd rely upon that evidence?
This evidence was designated, and Dr. Boyd was aware of this evidence, and when he testified that he, as I said at the beginning, either excluded all of the likely causes of death or relied on others to do so, it is our position that he relied upon Dr. Casalero and Dr. Posthumus together to understand, I don't have to rule out respiratory. I can start where the pathology report is, a cardiac arrhythmia, and now I can determine if there is a genetic reason to have that cardiac arrhythmia. And that's our position.
And does the record reflect Boyd saying, I'm relying upon Casalero and Posthumus?
The record does not have a specific statement to that effect, Your Honor.
Okay.
Both designations are in the same expert designation, which will be found at the record pages 585 through 588, where both of those experts' designations are together for them to each rely upon and read. I'd like to address briefly Dr. James Lee testifying at trial. He did not testify to what the standard of care is. He did not testify to whether or not he met the standard of care. He did not testify to the cause of death. He did not testify to damages. He did not testify on scientific matters or medical matters in a generic way. If he had done any of those, he would be an expert witness. He testified about his thought process, his application of his thought process, training, and experience with regards to taking care of Adam Trache. And any time one is trying to help a jury understand your thought process, they have to understand how you would handle different situations that may or may not come up in that same patient scenario. The purpose of his testimony was for him to explain to the jury why he took the patient to surgery and what he would have done if he had different information. Because at the heart of every professional malpractice case, there is some unknown factor. A surgeon who's performing surgery and cuts the wrong area, if it's malpractice, not intentional tort, he doesn't know he's cutting the wrong area. It's unknown to him. He thinks he's in the right area, but he's not. If it's a misdiagnosis case, there's a piece of information missing in his analysis, or there's some lack of his education from his background. There's an unknown, so he makes a misdiagnosis. Here, the unknown is that my client did not realize this patient was the product of a consanguineous marriage and had two predeceased siblings. And he has an opinion as to what he himself would do had he known that.
I apologize for interrupting again, but I'm trying to find your brief on appeal, the argument that Dr. Boyd relied upon Castellari's testimony in forming his opinion.
I did not mention Dr. Castellari by name in that brief. We focused on the autopsy report in the brief. But the citations I gave demonstrate where in the expert designation those opinions are, and the testimony of Dr. Castellari.
The question is not where they are in the record. The question is, what did Dr. Boyd rely on? And in your brief, you say that he relied on the autopsy report. It's on page 11. Dr. Boyd relied on the autopsy report and conclusion excluding potential causes of Adam's death other than cardiac arrhythmia. Dr. Boyd independently reviewed his medical records, Adam's medical records, and other information presented to him, such as photographs of Adam. After examining the medical records and other documents, Dr. Boyd suspected that Adam may have died from a genetic abnormality based upon, it's an unusual name for a medical examiner, Dr. Posthumus, based on Dr. Posthumus' conclusion that Adam died of cardiac arrhythmia and his own evaluation of Adam's potential susceptibility to a genetic disorder, Dr. Boyd used his expertise in genetics to identify potential causes of Adam's death, including Brugada syndrome. Your entire brief and argument is focused on the medical examiner's report having excluded a respiratory cause for cardiac arrhythmia, and it didn't.
Well, our position, Your Honor, again, is that Dr. Boyd did testify at page the appendix 392 that he relied on others to exclude other matters, not by name, just Dr. Posthumus. However, I don't believe when Ms. Tracia's counsel returns to the stand, you will hear that Dr. Posthumus did not rule out the respiratory matter. Dr. Posthumus did not testify, but Dr. Boyd, a reasonably prudent medical geneticist, looked at this autopsy and concluded respiratory is not the cause of death. Looking at the same information, Dr. Ewan, Mrs. Tracia's expert, looked at the same information.
That's just not the case. It says cardiac arrhythmia of unknown etiology. It could have been Brugada. It could have been respiratory. Perhaps it could have been something that we're not even thinking about at the moment. But unknown etiology means I don't know.
I do believe that if the court looked at that paragraph right above it that I had mentioned, it helps to give the context, particularly from the perspective of a geneticist, to try to evaluate cardiac arrhythmia as the cause of death, particularly since cardiac channelopathies are cardiac arrhythmias caused by genetic problems. Specifically, that's what Dr. Posthumus is focusing on as a possibility. She can't rule it out because she's not a geneticist, nor could Ms. Tracia's pathologist rule out the genetic causes. But the geneticist can look at that and determine, based on the cardiac arrhythmia, was there a genetic cause that could lead to a channelopathy? He found one and found it through testing of the actual blood and was able to conclude that the reason for the cardiac arrhythmia is exactly what Dr. Poshman suspected, a cardiac channelopathy, because of, well, not specifically because of the consanguineous marriage, but because of genetic defects.
All right, your time has expired. Rebuttal?
Because I know better than to engage in Lily gilding, I will respectfully submit that unless you have questions, the case can be submitted.
All right. Clerk will call the next case.